Welcome to Ed Show number 93. And today you'll notice we have a special guest here. Welcome.
Thank you, David.
Yeah. What? Can you tell people who you are and what you're doing up here?
Yeah, my name is Danilo. I'm from Microsoft Brazil.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm going to spend 6 weeks here in Microsoft Corporation in a special project, in assignment. So Microsoft has this kind of job rotation. So I'll be here for a DevOps project working with you.
There we go. Yeah. And so for those of you who are just tuning in, we have a DevOps episode here today about Chef and Azure connectivity. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's just go ahead and go through the news. The first up, we've got some new announcements on Windows Azure, as we have actually for the past 4 weeks, we've had something new on Windows Azure. You'll notice that's probably going to be a common theme moving forward of new Azure stuff. But anyway, let's keep going here. Windows Azure websites, we have a backup and restore option now. That's really kind of handy for folks who want to, of course, make sure that things don't get lost with the website itself, kind of providing that resiliency as an IT guy. That's makes you feel good, right?
Yeah,
when you
awesome.
Get the backup going. Management co-admin support increased from 10 to 200 administrators per subscription. So for those of you who have a ton of different people that need to access and create resources inside of a single Windows Azure subscription, now you've got 200. Hopefully that'll handle you well. Then we also have monitoring for service outage notifications integrated in with the management portal. This is pretty handy because if you're wondering like, oh, something's off or down, we're not sure what's going on, or you just kind of want to have that feel-good experience of knowing that everything is running smoothly. Of course, we have great SLAs, 99.95 SLA with, let's say, for instance, your virtual machines in an availability group. But of course, there always could be something that happens. It's nice to have that visibility right there inside the console. So that's new to be able to check that out. Okay, virtual machines. The other thing, and this is a pretty big one for IT folks that are out there today. We are now introduced the agent into the VMs. Optionally, if you want, you can see that checkbox there. You have the option to install an agent on the VM. Why is that a big deal? Well, with the agent, you can do right now some things, but in the future, you'll be able to do a lot more things with all your instances that you deploy. For right now, we just have a simple example of, let's say, background info, right? So if you go ahead and connect up to a particular VM, you've got the BG info running as an option that the agent provides to show you what instance are you on and what is it running, what does it look like, right?
Yeah.
So you're not lost when you already pee into it. What else do we have, Danilo, in the Azure space?
Yeah, we do have more in Azure. Like you mentioned, every week there are some news.
Yeah.
So there is a new MVA Academy for Azure, and specifically about the Internet of Things. Probably this is one of the mega trends changing, how to deal with this explosion of devices, so smartphones, tablets, even TVs or cars, which, are running thousands of apps. So you do need a really good back end to support this kind of devices. So this MVA training, it's about Azure Mobile Services, which is this back end to deal with this kind of connected devices to the internet. So these mobile services, it provides a lot of features such as, push notification, authentication, stuff like that. So you'll be learning this MVA, how to put this infrastructure in place. So I truly recommend this kind of training.
Yeah.
Of course, for IT pros to really be prepared to have a really good infrastructure for this kind of scenario.
For mobile devices, yeah.
Yeah,
great. So yeah,
device.
Check out the MVA course. Definitely do that.
Yeah.
Another, last but not least, Windows Azure announcement. We announced a new instance type for Windows Azure. So for those of you who have really compute-intensive workloads, you'll notice here that we have what we're calling A8 and A9. Frankly, we started to run out of t-shirt size names.
Yeah.
with these ones, right, you could have up to 16 cores, 112 gigs of RAM. It's going to cost you about $4.90 an hour. And as some of you may know, we do billing by the minute, which is something kind of unique from some of our competitions. So, pretty cool there if you need to crank out some massive compute memory workloads.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting off of the Azure topic, yeah. What else is new in, around the Microsoft world for IT folks?
Yeah, this week is running the SharePoint conference. So it's the largest event to talk about not only SharePoint, but also about Yammer, Office 365, and other Office products. So a lot of announcements, which really it's important to IT pros. Uh-huh. So one of them is regarding the OneDrive for Business,
yeah.
which is the formerly SkyDrive Pro. So there is a new standalone subscription where customers, they can buy this kind of solution without requiring to have the SharePoint or Office 365 subscription, yep. which is really good for a solution for sync files on the cloud, yep. syncing between, you know, several different devices, not only Microsoft devices, but iOS and Android as well.
Yeah.
So it's a really good solution with management and security. So
yeah,
that's important.
Yeah, a good cross-management solution. For those of you who don't know, I mean, if you heard of SkyDrive or SkyDrive Pro, OneDrive would be the new name, and as well as, you know, at SharePoint, you know, we have new announcements, of course, the standalone version. It looks like with Service Pack 1 and SharePoint 2013, you can do some other cool stuff too there with your OneDrive for Business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and we do know that IT pros, they are users as well. So one of the announcements is about a new solution called Office Graph, which is coming to the Office 365, which basically is putting a lot of mega trends like, you know, machine learning, cloud, and this proliferation of devices, stuff like that. So you can have a really good visual map about your interaction. So if you exchange emails with a team or a kind of, we kind of content you are looking at, a PowerPoint or stuff like that, you really have a good understanding of your behaviors. So this is something that, you know, Microsoft is investing. So it's another really good tool where the IT pros can take a look and starting to figure out how to land in this in the future.
Yeah, yeah, very cool stuff. Yeah. Very cool stuff. I know, you know, there's also a lot of buzz around that Yammer integration and how to do social and interactions with some of the stuff that's coming out in Office 365.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, well, with that, we are going to switch over to, I would say, well, really our first DevOps-focused episode here on The Edge Show. And so just stay tuned. All right, we are continuing on with The Edge Show. And as some of you know, I am going to be focusing a lot more on DevOps. And I thought, what better way to kick off a DevOps technical discussion than with Ross here. And so, Ross, could you let folks know a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a senior technology evangelist with Microsoft Open Technologies. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft, and okay. we deal with the interaction between open source, open standards, mm-hmm. et cetera, and Microsoft products. So we're building bridges between the open source communities and with the Microsoft product teams.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising for some folks, like, Chef, wait, huh? That's not Microsoft stuff. So
yep.
What is your role in the open source space itself?
So I joined Microsoft OpenTech about a year ago. My whole career is set in open source. So
okay.
If you have a look around the web, you'll find me all over the place in open source. So it's kind of a surprise for me to find myself here. But I'm really happy to be here. There's a lot of really valuable opportunities for somebody like me. In terms of my open source engagement, I work a lot in the Apache Software Foundation. I'm currently the president of the foundation.
Okay.
I've served on the board of directors. I'm a member, et cetera, et cetera.
Awesome. Yeah.
And this is letting me branch out well beyond.
That's great. So, hey, for those of you out there, it's pretty, I would say, pretty credible source on the open source space to come on to Microsoft.
Well,
so.
All it really means is I don't say no very well.
Yeah. It's all good. All right. So for those out there who may not know about Chef, maybe we'll do a quick introduction of what Chef is, and maybe you can tell, like, why we're doing this. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So yeah, Chef is a DevOps tool.
Mm-hmm.
DevOps is this idea of the intersection between developers and mm-hmm. operations, the people who create mm-hmm. the code and the people who put it into production, into operation, and so
mm-hmm.
on. And Chef is one of a number of very important tools in this space. And what it does is it allows you to manage your infrastructure over time. So
mm-hmm.
As an application grows, then the infrastructure for that application goes. You need to do load balancing. You need to do multiple servers for
mm-hmm.
your database. You need to do caching. You need
mm-hmm.
to do so much more.
Okay.
And at each of the development stages, it will often be different. And you need to hand over that configuration to to the next stage, mm-hmm. the testing stage or the production stage and so on. And Chef is something that enables you to store that configuration in code. Makes it much easier to manage. You can version control it. You can hand over that code, and it will then configure your infrastructure accordingly.
Okay, that's very cool. So, well, how does that relate to Microsoft, and why are we doing anything?
Yeah,
with it?
Well, I mean, the simple answer of why we're doing it is because customers need it.
Yeah.
The DevOps movement is extremely popular in newer companies, smaller companies, and internet age companies such as Facebook and Yahoo and so on. Mm-hmm. Where that's where really where the DevOps thing has come about. But as DevOps becomes increasingly important and people recognize the value of it, enterprise starts to need it.
Yep.
So we're in a position as Microsoft, we have all these enterprise customers who are looking at this and they want to move things to the cloud, they want to burst things to the cloud, and this is becoming an important part of their infrastructure.
Yep.
And there's companies like Chef that we're going to talk about today, but there are other companies like Puppet Labs and Ansible and SaltStack and Vagrant and many other companies and products that, that provide expert knowledge about how to do this. So we want to do the true open source thing. Work with the open source communities to deliver the best solution on Azure for our customers and their customers.
Yeah, people want to deploy stuff in Azure from Chef. Well, here we have it. So can you dive in a little more on what else we can provide, right?
So we'll just go through a very quick and simple demo. So what we're going to do here is only look at the Azure services. What the Chef provisioning that we've done at MS OpenTech and we've made available through the Chef project is it enables you to leverage all of the existing infrastructure that's there for Chef. So if you want to deploy an Apache web service or an Nginx web server or a MySQL database or whatever, there's what's called cookbooks, which will help you do that and help you configure it. So you get access to all those anyway. Now we've enabled Chef on Azure.
Okay.
What we're going to look at today, though, is Azure-specific things.
Right.
So we're going to look at a very simple use case. It's not really a real practical use case, but for your audience who understand this stuff, it should indicate the direction. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a new node, so that's a virtual machine. We're going to provision that, and then we're going to configure that, make sure that there's a storage container available for it, and we're going to store the credentials from that storage container on the node itself. So you can think of that as a configuration file for whatever application you're going to build on that node.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. So firing up a Chef server up inside of Windows Azure, and then all the required Azure resources that need to be there for that VM to be created, i.e., storage account and whatnot. Okay.
Exactly. So well, we first need to have a look at some code. So this is a file that in this case I've put it all into a configuration file called knife.rb.
Okay.
These all can be configured in the command line if you want them to be, etc.
Uh-huh.
But what this contains is some important information like your Azure subscription ID.
Okay.
In order to create services on Azure, obviously you've got to have an Azure account and Azure subscription. So this is where you would put that information.
Okay.
We're also going to talk about, in this case, we can manage the affinity groups and the virtual networks, which we set up previously. You don't have to work with them, just as when you're doing it through the Azure portal. You can choose to be in an affinity group or not. Same thing with Azure.
Okay.
Here we're just showing that you can do it. Just we're not actually going to use them in the demo, but it's there. It's supported.
And so, just for folks that don't know, knife. What does a knife mean? What is that?
So knife is the command line tool. That comes with Chef. You use knife to do pretty much everything.
Okay.
I mean, it's the primary tool.
Tool to create recipes and cookbooks for
precisely,
things. Right. It's the root level tool. So we are having a knife to create a VM image, affinity group, and a network, and all those things.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the contribution we, OpenTech, have made to the project is what's called Knife Azure, which is these functions that provide ability to handle Azure.
Yeah, makes sense.
To manage Azure.
So I see that you've already gone ahead and probably deployed some stuff into Azure using the knife. So
that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can we take a look at what those commands
are? We can. I just want to draw attention to just one thing at the moment, which is this Azure source image near the bottom here. You can actually see that we're going to be working with an Ubuntu image here.
Okay.
I wanted to highlight that because even today, even though we've been supporting Ubuntu for a long time on Azure, there's still people that are surprised about it.
Like what? There's Linux on Azure, huh? What?
And it's not just Ubuntu, it's multiple different distributions and so on.
Well, and to hit that point again, like Microsoft doesn't manage the images themselves. We rely on the sources, the credible sources of people who create Linux images.
Yeah. So in the case of Ubuntu, it's Canonical, of course.
Exactly. So,
but of course, it can be Windows.
Right.
I mean, we're not limited to Linux. Yep. It supports Windows and Linux regardless.
Okay.
So what we need to do is we need to create a server. So the command you want to run, I've typed it in here so I don't get all butterfingers on my keyboard here. But we're just saying knife Azure server create.
Okay.
And that's going to read that knife.rb file that we just looked at, and it's going to create the server for us. Okay.
Okay.
Now this takes some time because you've got the provisioning across and so on.
Right.
So whilst that's happening, what we can do, or what we need to do rather in knife.rb is everything we just looked at. We define the DNS name, we try to define the virtual machine name, we define the affinity group, virtual network, the source image, and the username and password is in that file as well.
Yep.
All that can be done from the command line if you want to, so you can script it in any way you want. If you're a PowerShell guru, then you can use that, etc.
Well, at some point, possibly, we might have a gallery image for, let's say, a Chef server, do you think?
So, yeah, that's a really good question. In these demos, we're using a version of the open source server, which we're hosting for ourselves, our own testing.
Mm-hmm.
You could use a Chef-hosted instance of it, or we hope in the near future we will be providing a gallery image for Chef server. So you'll have a number of different options depending on how much you want to get involved with the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, makes sense.
The next thing we need to do, all we're doing when that's completed, is we're creating a virtual machine which is bootstrapped with the Chef client.
Right.
Okay. It's not got any of the configuration we want on it at this point. Mm-hmm. So we need to provide a cookbook which gives that configuration. So we'll have a look, see how we're doing there. You see,
the server, the virtual machine's provisioning with the kind of base install of Chef.
Yep. So that's on its way. Whilst that's still on its way, I will pull up the default RB file.
Okay.
So this is part of the cookbook which defines what configuration we want on that machine when it's completed.
Yep.
It's very simple and it's just code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first one we're looking at the top here is we're saying create an Azure storage container with the name container name, which is a variable which we're setting in this case to the node name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but whatever is necessary.
Yeah, you can call it whatever you want to call it.
We provide, if I scroll down a little bit, we provide the storage account and the storage key. In this case, I've hard-coded them. You get them from the Azure subscription.
Yep. So that's connecting up to your Azure storage account.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. And then we're saying action, create.
Okay.
And what that does is it doesn't just blindly create the storage. What it does is it says, does this storage container already exist? If it does, it doesn't do anything. So it says, okay, it's fine. It's in existence.
Okay.
If it doesn't, it creates it. So what we're doing here in a very small amount of code is actually encoding quite a lot of logic.
Okay.
And you'll see that in the next instance here. So that action, when it's performed, will simply create the Azure storage
account. And then what is that storage account going to be used for here?
Well, in this case, we're just showing you can create one.
Okay.
But you know, in a real-world application, there would be an application deployed to that VM, and that VM would be using the storage account for whatever it was,
logs or whoever knows what else the app wants.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. What we're also going to do, because if you have got an application which is writing content to that storage account, you need the credentials to access it. So that's what's happening here. We're saying we also need a resource which is a file. We want to store it in etc storage info. And we want it to have this content. And the content is made up of the URL to the container and the key that we need to be able to access that. So think of it as a configuration file for your application.
Okay.
Why would we want to do that? Well, in the test stage, you don't want to be using the live storage container that's got the content that's going to be used in the live application. So you'd be using a different storage container in test.
Uh-huh.
Likewise, in development, you would be using a different storage account.
So, yeah. Okay.
So using this kind of thing, you can define slightly different configurations, which only really vary in subtle ways, such as precisely which storage container are we going to use.
Yeah.
So we're going to store this on the actual virtual machine itself. Mm-hmm. It's got credentials in there. We want it to be more secure, etc. We're setting its mode of access there. And again, we're saying create. And just like the other one, what it'll do is says, does this file exist? But in this case, we're not saying, it's not just a yes, no, does it exist? It's also saying, does it have the right content in it? And if it hasn't got the right content, then it will update that file.
Okay.
Okay, so you can change things very quickly, very easily.
And so if you wanted, you could even customize this, I'm guessing here, to connect up to a source control with Git or something else,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes. And there are cookbooks for doing precisely that. There are thousands of cookbooks out there that we can reuse to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, in this example, very simple. Have a storage account. You're going to store your code or part of your app configuration on that storage account, but it very well could be Git repository or whatever else you want to connect up to your Chef.
Absolutely. Server. And Chef is unbelievably powerful with what you can do with it.
Okay. So let's say it looks like that's still rolling.
Still rolling.
There. Let's say we have one already pre-cooked here, huh? And what do we do then?
So we have, when I was growing up, we had this TV program called Blue Peter, and they'd always say, here's one I prepared earlier.
Just like any good cooking show, you've got one already pre-made. Well, how about
exactly.
that, huh?
How did that happen? So in this case, once it's been provisioned, and the one I am provisioning is called Chef Node 1. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work with Chef Node 2, which I set up earlier.
Sure.
And what we're going to do here is we're going to add a role. Now, a role defines a certain set of things that we want to be configured on that particular machine.
Okay.
And that's a pre-configured role that I've already uploaded to our server. So our server knows what that role is.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's going to do things like make sure the APT files, this is Ubuntu, so the apt-get will work for any dependencies that come down, so make sure they're all up to date. It's going to make sure the Azure dependencies are on there. It's going to make sure that anything it needs to talk to an Azure storage container is going to be on there, those kinds of configurations and so on. So the first thing you need to do is tell it what role you want it to be in, and that's what we're going to do here. So that is simply telling the server that this Chef Node 2 needs to be this role.
Needs to be the Azure Demo role.
Needs to be the Azure Demo role, precisely. And then once it's done that, if this was in production, I could walk away, because at some point in the near future, a cron job would run. The Chef client would say to the server, what should I look like? The server will say, here's your run list. Mm-hmm. Compare yourself against the results of that run list.
Okay.
And the client will say, okay, well, I have got this, but I haven't got that, and it will make any changes that it needs to make.
Okay.
What we're going to do, because we don't want to wait for the cron job to run, is we're going to force it to actually execute. So I'm just going to copy the content here, the command, rather, from here. Oh, that's the one we just done. Make sure I get the right one. So
this is now going to configure a client to connect up to the image, yeah?
That's
or to the
correct.
Chef server.
Okay. Yes, correct.
Okay.
Well, the client already knows, the client is already on there. It's just completed, in fact. And if we were to scroll back during this, we'd see that it was bootstrapping the client on there. So the client is already there. What we're going to do is tell the client to actually execute and ensure that its run list
is
ready.
Okay.
So if I just paste that in. Okay, so this is now going to force, by the sudo chef client command at the end of that, it's going to SSH into the client and then force the client to run. And what we're seeing on the output here is the results of that happening. Now, if we were to go back through that, we would find it's checking that APT was updated and doing all that kind of thing. It would be creating the storage account. And if I now go to the Azure portal, and I'll just refresh this page, we should, and there it is.
So we see your Azure storage account. Then you also have, can we see the Chef server and client VMs there that you have?
So yes, we can. So there's the storage account that's been created, Chef Node 2. And you want to see the VM. Wow, there's a lot of VMs on here. It just happens to be
Chef
right
Node
at the
2,
top.
Right at the top there.
Yeah,
okay.
we should, if we went through that list, we should also find a Chef Node 1, which was the one we were creating behind the scenes rather than the previous one. So what we've done is we've created a VM, bootstrapped the Chef client with one simple command, and then we've told it the run list and executed that run list.
Okay.
And that's configured the server the way we wanted it to be configured.
Okay, that's very cool. So let's say you want to scale and deploy more nodes or start monitoring or getting an idea of configuration of all different kinds of resources on Windows Azure. What would you do there? What are your options for that?
So we now have the base install for an Azure demo. So I can now use that Azure demo role to make sure that any machine is configured correctly with the appropriate prerequisites. So I've got nothing to do to be able to scale to multiple nodes. At the beginning, we said we'll create an affinity group and we'll put it into a virtual network and so on. Well, this demo is likely to expand into actually showing that in practice.
Right.
In order to do that, all I need to do is create another node with exactly the same configuration, but with a different DNS name and a different node name.
Okay.
Okay, and then they would automatically be in the same affinity group, et cetera. So the end result is the same as going through the management portal, manually clicking the appropriate boxes, then SSHing into it, and then doing apt get and all the necessary things we're doing.
You would use that same chef recipe to create another client node, and then that client node, because you have the server there, would automatically pick up the configuration that you've set the chef server to have it look for, and then chef now has view of whatever you're pushing out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And because the chef server that I'm using is already configured with the various roles and it understands the cookbooks that I've got very little to do to reproduce the same kind of environment that I want to work in. In fact, as we were talking then, I just saw it flick in the corner of my eye. We can see that the chef node one has just been deployed while we were talking about how you would deploy another node that's similar.
Okay.
Kind of fortunate.
Okay, there we go. Hey, it works out. Good timing, yeah? There we go. All right, very cool. So what can you recommend for folks that want to learn more about how to do this themselves and start using it?
So the best resource to get started with Chef is by far the Chef tutorial materials. They've got some fantastic videos that take you through the very beginnings of what is Chef. It's about a 6-series course. Each one's about 40 minutes long.
Okay.
So you go to getchef.com.
Okay.
If you're specifically interested in the Azure stuff, when you're doing that course or when you're reading around that, you'll learn about the repository and you'll find all the Knife Azure stuff that we've contributed in the official Chef repos.
Okay.
The other source, of course, is the MS OpenTech blog, which you can get to with msopentech.com. And every time we add significant new functionality, and we'll be writing some tutorials and things like that about Azure specific things over there.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Russ.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that episode with Windows Azure connecting up to Chef, or Chef deploying Windows Azure resources, I should say. And if you want to learn more things about whatever, as it relates to kind of the IT operations audience, definitely let us know. We have edge@microsoft.com is our email. You can hit us up on Facebook, send us a tweet at TNEdge, or download the Edge app, right? We've got a Windows 8 Edge app, which is kind of handy if you want to download the videos offline, watch them at a faster speed, hear us with mouse voices or whatever, right?
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. All right. And comments on the video itself, right? Definitely just comment right below on this one if you have questions specific to the technical stuff contained in this video. Till next time, stay tuned.
See you.